Good evening, welcome to tonight's meeting of Bethlehem City Council. It is Tuesday, April 20th. The time is 7:03 p.m. here in Town Hall. We'd all please rise for the Pledge of Allegiance. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Callahan.
Present.
Mr. Cologne.
Present.
Ms. Gramsci Smith.
Present.
Ms. Negron. Mr. Reynolds.
Present.
Dr. Van Wert.
Present.
Mr. Waldron.
Present. Thank you all for joining us this evening. Prior to our consideration of our regular agenda items, City Council will conduct two public hearings this evening. Our first public hearing is to review and accept public comment on the zoning map amendment proposal submitted by the property owner at 1852 West Market and 1843 West Broad Street from CL Limited Commercial to LI Light Industrial to allow the completion of a minor subdivision plan and the related expansion of existing auto repair businesses. In connection with the public hearing, there are two communications which we'll ask the clerk to read. Communication 6A.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, with an attached privately proposed zoning map amendment related to 1852 West Market Street, 1843 West Broad Street, to rezone the affected land from CL Limited Commercial to LI Light Industrial, to allow the completion of a minor subdivision plan and the related expansion of an existing auto repair business. At their March 11th, 2021 meeting, the City Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend that Council support the proposed zoning ordinance map amendment.
Thank you, Mr. Redoni. Also, Communication 6B.
A letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission concerning the review of the proposed zoning map amendment related to rezoning 1852 West Market Street, 1843 West Broad Street from CL Limited Commercial to LI Light Industrial. The Commission stated that the proposal is generally consistent with the regional plan because it supports the expansion of small businesses and entrepreneurship and encourages reuse of vacant and underutilized properties.
And our second public hearing is to receive public comment on the zoning text amendment requested by the property owner related to the office mixed-use zoning district at the Martin Tower site at 1170 8th Avenue. In connection with this public hearing, there are two communications which the clerk will read.
A memorandum from Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, with an attached privately proposed zoning text amendment that would affect the office mixed-use district at the former Martin Tower site at 1170 8th Avenue. The proposed amendment would amend sections 1311.08A, 1311.08B, and 1314.02B5 of the city zoning ordinance related to parking in front of principal buildings, entering and exiting on arterial streets and rear yard setbacks. At the March 11, 2021 meeting, the City Planning Commission voted unanimously to recommend that City Council support the proposed zoning ordinance amendment.
And Communication 6D.
A letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission concerning the review of a privately proposed zoning text amendment that would affect the office mixed-use district at the former Martin Tower site at 1170 8th Avenue. The Commission recommended that the developer seek a variance from the Bethlehem Zoning Hearing Board where the Pennsylvania Municipalities Planning Code directs requests for relief.
Thank you. The first public hearing is called to order concerning a privately proposed zoning map amendment proposal submitted by the property owner at 1852 West Market and 1843 West Broad Street from CL to LI to allow the completion of a minor subdivision plan and related expansion of the existing auto repair business. I will now recognize representatives of the zoning amendment petitioner to speak about the privately requested zoning map amendment.
Good evening, Mr. Waldron, or President Waldron. Michael Rashumi on behalf of the Varis Real Estate Investments. The project manager, Harold Liebman, is also on tonight. What we are requesting is a rezoning of a portion of 1852 West Market Street. This is being acquired by Tavares Real Estate Investments. You may recall at your August 18th, 2020 meeting, you approved, City Council approved a transfer of that land to Tavares by resolution. An agreement was worked out with the city that was finalized in January of 2021. As part of that agreement, we had to submit a minor subdivision plan to do a lot line adjustment to take a portion of the 1852 West Market Street property and combine that with the 1843 West Broad Street property. For the subdivision to be approved, they have to be zoned the same. So we are seeking a change on the 1852 West Market Street to match that is currently commercial, limited commercial CL. We are seeking to have that change to light industrial.
Thank you, Mr. Ricchiuti. Before I ask questions or turn it over to council to ask questions, I'll recognize Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, to discuss the zoning amendment.
Thank you. To be honest, I don't have very much to add. It's pretty straightforward. It is something that council supported at a prior meeting, and the zoning map change really just cleans up the transfer of land so that this parcel continues to be zoned, so that it's not split zone, put it that way. So there's really not a whole lot that I need to add at this point. We support it.
Thank you, Ms. Haller. I'll surely turn to members of council if they have any questions or comments for either the petitioner or Ms. Heller on the project, but this seems like a pretty straightforward request, which I think makes sense to move the project forward. So I will be supporting it when we have that first reading of the ordinance. Are there any other questions or comments from members of council? Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Thank you. I just want to say I did meet with Mr. Lieberman, I think it was last year maybe, as the chair of Public Works, because we were looking at, the owner of the property was looking at purchasing some of the city land, which we did have that transaction go through. And I was really impressed with what the property owner is doing with the property, and it's really great in that he's really enhancing workforce in the city, especially kind of minorities within the city, supplying jobs. So I will definitely be supporting this because I'm very pleased with what the owner has plans to do with the land and the property.
Thank you, Ms. Cramsey-Smith. And I would add, this intersection is one of the gateways to West Bethlehem on the corner there, when I think they've done well recently to help improve that space, which offers visitors as well as residents of the city a nice entrance into the city, and I look forward to seeing more progress on that corner. If there's no other questions or comments from members of council, I will open a public comment. If anyone would like to make comment on the public hearing at hand and only that topic, the number to do so is 610-997-7963. We'll have additional opportunity this evening to comment on other topics, but at this time, council is accepting public comment on the proposed zoning change at 1852 West Market and 1843 West Broad. We have no names previously signed up for public comment, so this will be the only opportunity to make comment during this public hearing on this topic. If there are no comments, the zoning amendment will be placed on the May 4th, 2021 council agenda for first reading. Thank you for joining us this evening, Mr. Ricchiuti and Mr. Lieberman.
Thank you.
Thank you for allowing us tonight.
Mr. Ronka, if you can mute your microphone, we're having some feedback. Thank you. This concludes the first public hearing. The second public hearing is called to order concerning a privately proposed zoning text amendment proposed by the developers of the former Martin Tower site located at 1170 8th Avenue, now recognized representatives of the zoning amendment petitioner to speak about their privately requested zoning amendment. Mr. Wagner?
Can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Sorry about that.
Mr. Ronca, if you could introduce yourself and proceed with your comments to the council. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you. This is Dwayne Wagner. Here representing the property owners for the petition for text amendments to the provisions outlined, provisions affecting the LMU zoning district, the city's zoning ordinance. Although everybody's fairly familiar with the Martin Tower site, its location, I'd like to begin with background information about the property and outline each of the amendments being requested. The subject property is located in the southeast quadrant of the intersection of Eaton Avenue. The subject property fronts on 8th Avenue, Eaton Avenue, and Shanesville Road, each of which is designated as an arterial street. The subject property is zoned OMU, office mixed use. The OMU zone district is comprised of 153-acre parcel of the former Martin Tower site. No other property in the city of Bethlehem has the OMU zoning designation. The OMU district is intended to promote redevelopment of areas in the city that are currently underutilized and partially developed. The subject property will be developed, subdivided into multiple lots and performed redevelopment, each of which will be under separate fee, ownership, and use. What we're requesting this evening and presenting at this public hearing are three zoning amendments to the zoning ordinance related to the OMU district. Amendment number one is to section 131108A to permit additional parking to be placed between a building and a curb line of an arterial street. Amendment number two is related to section 131108B to permit a new signalized driveway entering an existing exiting onto an arterial street. And amendment number three is related to section 1314.02E5 reduce the rear yard setback to 20 feet. The zoning amendments requested were reviewed by the city administration and zoning amendments as written are supported by the mayor. The zoning amendments requested were presented to the City of Bethlehem Planning Commission at the March 11th meeting, and all three requested amendments were approved with unanimous support of the commission. And the zoning amendments requested have been reviewed by Lehigh Valley Planning Commission after April 20th comprehensive planning committee meeting, and the zoning amendments as written were supported by the commission. Amendment number one, the existing ordinance reads section 131108A of the City of Bethlehem zoning ordinance states, in the OMU district, parking spaces placed between a principal commercial building and a curb line on our arterial street along the front of the lot shall be limited to one driving aisle and one row of parking spaces. The petitioner is requesting to develop or is proposing to develop two large three-story medical office buildings and a grocery store along the 8th Avenue front that would run from 378 up to Eaton Avenue along the east side of 8th Avenue, and a large three-story professional office building along the Eaton Avenue frontage. The parking space placement limitations set forth in zoning ordinance 131108A will result in poor vehicular circulation around medical office buildings and poor accessibility. The drop-off entry can't be facing the arterial street. These buildings will be fronting 8th Avenue, so the main access point will be along 8th Avenue. The buildings will be designed with a canopy for drop-off and access along 8th Avenue, fronting 8th Avenue. The parking space placement limitation causes the majority of the parking spaces to be at the rear of the building, such as the patrons visiting at the buildings, the majority of which are elderly, will be required to walk much further distances to enter the facilities, so it's really a function of allowing a better person parking around the buildings. The parking placement limitation will also result in the loss of parking spaces, including handicapped ADA space adjacent to the entry of the grocery store. The way it works is the ADA spaces would be placed at the building, next to the building in the entry, and one drive aisle would eliminate the ability to put parking across the aisle along 8th Avenue. So we eliminate either the parking spaces to support the size of the building or eliminate the ADA spaces along next to the building. the parking space placement limitation as well, the loss of parking spaces along the professional office building as well for the same reason. Not being able to have two more than one row of parking along access aisle limits the amount of parking we're allowed to design for the buildings. The parking space placement limitation set forth in section 11, 13, 11, 08A is generally inconsistent with most of the properties in the vicinity of the subject property, many of which were redeveloped or developed in recent years. And the last building that completed was in 2018 at the northeast corner of 8th Avenue and Eaton Avenue. All of the properties along the east side of 8th Avenue, the same side as the Market Tower property, have parking space placement inconsistent with limitations set forth in section 14.11.08A, including the medical building, medical and professional buildings located at 834 Eaton Avenue, 1530 8th Avenue, and the Wawa at 1584 8th Avenue. In addition, the medical office buildings at 1417 8th Avenue, 1469 8th Avenue, and 1521 8th Avenue, and the grocery store at 1001 8th Avenue also have parking placement that is inconsistent with the limitations set forth in 13.11.08A. It's also important to note that none of the adjacent zones, zones adjacent to the OMU district, have a parking limitation requirement. So essentially what you see is if you look at an aerial map, or in a photo, you'll see all the properties along the east side of 8th Avenue that go from 378 up to Schumacher Road all have more than one row of parking in one drive aisle in front of the building along 8th Avenue, and many of them across the street on the west side, basically everything excluding the CVS and the bank branch are also have that condition to have more parking than one row and one access aisle. So the second amendment requested is to section 13.11.08B, which states that no new vehicle driveway shall enter or exit onto a material street unless the applicant proves that no feasible alternative exists, such as the use of alleys or a side street. It's important to note that the purpose of this limitation is to prevent multiple driveways from entering and exiting onto the street in an unsafe condition. Utilizing a controlled slash signalized intersection does not create an unsafe condition. We utilize an already existing signal. We are proposing to develop the east leg of the existing three-way signalized intersection on 8th Avenue. This is the traffic light that exists halfway up the 8th Avenue between 8th Avenue and Market Court at the CVS entryway. You have access to the signal controls, north and south movements, as well as movements into and from the west side of the 8th Avenue. So we'd just be completing the fourth east leg to provide direct access from 8th Avenue to the medical office building, parking areas, as well as the interior of the Martin Tower site. Direct access by way of the signal in this intersection will be controlled and therefore will not result in the dangerous or undesirable condition that section 13.11.08 is intended to prevent, namely multiple uncontrolled access and egress points along the arterial street. Planned development of the final leg of the existing three-way signalized intersection on 8th Avenue will utilize existing improvements to allow access to the Martin Tower site consistent with development along the 8th Avenue corridor. Again, we're utilizing the traffic signal that was put in to allow access to the property, the redevelopment site on the west side of 8th Avenue. We're utilizing that same intersection to access the property on the east side of 8th Avenue. The third amendment we're requesting is related to section 1314.02B5, which requires a 30-foot minimum rear yard setback. The intended development plan results in multiple corner lots, meaning as the property is subdivided and interior roadways are created at those intersections, you're creating multiple corner lots that results in a front yard and a rear yard that could be considered side yards. So depending on which street is determined to be the front yard of a lot, the opposite lot line would be otherwise deemed a side yard, is now considered to be a rear yard. So again, we're requesting to reduce the rear yard setback from 30 feet to 20 feet. And you should noted that there are no rear yards planned to be situated along 8th Avenue or Eaton Avenue. So the requested relief or the requested amendment to section 13.14.02b5 would have no impact to along the 8th Avenue or Eaton Avenue corridors. So there would be no visual impact. This is basically something that affects only the interior rear yard and lot lines within the development itself. So just in summary, the OMU district is comprised of 153 acre parcel, this site. There's no other property in the city of Bethlehem that has the OMU designation. The OMU district is intended to promote redevelopment of the areas in the city that are currently utilized and partially developed. The three amendments to the zoning ordinance within the OMU district we're requesting are to section 1311 OEA to permit additional parking to be placed within a building and curb lot of an arterial street. 1311.08B, a new signalized driveway entering or exiting onto the arterial street. And finally, section 1314.02B5 to reduce the rear yard setback from 30 feet to 20 feet. The requested amendment provides for the development of the subject property without any adverse impact to, and they are consistent with, the existing properties along the 8th Avenue and Eaton Avenue corridors. The requested amendments allow for the existing signalized intersection on 8th Avenue to be utilized to incorporate safe access into the subject property, and the requested amendments are supported by the Maryland Administration and the City Planning Commission. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments, Mr. Wagner. At this point, I'll turn to Darlene Heller, Director of Planning and Zoning, to discuss the privately proposed zoning amendment.
Thank you. We reviewed the entire master plan back in the spring of 2019 and provided a broad range of comments on the development at that time. At this point, we really only took a look at the three provisions that were submitted along with this zoning amendment. And as was noted, the Planning Commission reviewed this proposal at their March meeting. They did support the amendments as they were proposed. The first one with the parking in front of the building, there was some discussion about that, but they did ultimately vote to support that. For the entranceway onto the arterial streets, both 8th and Eaton are arterial streets, and so there's really no way around that without allowing better access for access management, so we did not have an issue with that, and we're assuming there would be dense development here, and so we did not have a concern about reducing the rear yard setback from 20 or from 30 feet rather to 20. So although it is a large significant project, we really only at this point looked at the three amendments when we reviewed with the Planning Commission. If you have any questions, I'll be happy to answer any questions.
And I'm sure we will, Ms. Heller. Just to clarify, this is our public hearing to discuss the proposed zoning text amendment by the developers of the Martin Tower site. Council will not be taking any action tonight on a vote. Our first reading of the agenda at this point is scheduled for May 4th, but this is an opportunity to ask questions of the developer and the administration on the project, as well as collect comments and feedback from members of the public. I'm sure those on council and many others would recall the long conversations we had, I think, back in 2015 about the development of this site. I think there was just myself, Mr. Reynolds, and Mr. Callahan of the current council that were on at the time when we had some of those long conversations. And we had a lot of feedback from members of the public who gave us some input saying they didn't want to see a third downtown developed. Likewise, though, there was some resistance to the idea of creating a strip mall destination that wouldn't have a city feel and wouldn't offer any walkability. And this may be council's only opportunity to weigh in on what is going to happen at such a large parcel of land in the heart of the city. So I think it's important that we're able to understand the vision of the developer as well as collect feedback from the administration and members of the public as what direction they'd like to see this large project go. At this point, we're being requested, council that is being requested to change the zoning to allow for parking changes for that site. And if you're following along at home or members of council, we have a colored handout here, which has the current zoning ordinance with a map. And if you're looking in the top left corner, you'll see what is currently proposed under our current zoning ordinance. And on that second side-by-side page is what is being requested by the developer. And Mr. Wagner or Ms. Heller, jump in if I'm misstating this, but essentially we're pushing those two top left buildings back and removing parking from the back of the building and pushing it to the front of the building. I know that's an oversimplification of the proposal that's in front of us, but if you're looking at the drawing that's been presented to council, that would be the request.
That's correct. You're essentially, in the way the zoning is written, the buildings along 8th Avenue are skewed to the left hand, the west side of the lot, and the amendment would allow those buildings to be more centrally located on the lot, which distributes the parking more evenly around the building.
Understood. Thank you, Mr. Wagner. And I would say, it's my perspective at least, that the reason people want to live in cities, want to spend time there, is because of the energy that a walkable neighborhood provides. And I think to have front-facing buildings that are as close to the street and the sidewalk is the goal. And this pushes that back a little bit. So I think, from my perspective, it's not a sizable change, but it is one that's definitely noticeable and I think should be considered in some of the ramifications that it may have. There's been some conversations about, why this is needed. So I'd be interested to hear, Mr. Wagner, your perspective as why the current zoning, as it is, would not allow for your project to be successful.
Yeah, well, with the two office buildings in particular along 8th Avenue, the way the current zoning reads, and that is shown on the left-hand side of the two color handouts you have there, it forces the buildings to the west side of the property and puts an inordinate amount of parking to the rear of the building. You see where the blue shaded area is on the left-hand side of the buildings? That's the entrance to the building, and that's where the ADA Festival parking is, and that's where the entry canopy is, the drop-off for the patients, and that sort of thing. So requiring that to be on a single-loaded parking line as well as a single drive aisle really puts an inordinate amount of traffic pressure on that front canopy. The alternate layout with the building pushed more towards the center of the lot distributes the parking more evenly and allows additional access for the patients and customers to be able to navigate the parking lot, and also provides more parking closer to the front of the building, again, to service the customers and the needs of their population.
I
And one other thing that you may want to note is the buildings, as shown on there, are three-story, 60,000-foot buildings. From a scale perspective, the building on the northwest corner where the St. Luke's oral surgeon is, that's a two-story, 20,000-foot building. So you're talking about another story and about a building three times the size of that. So I think pushing it towards the center of the lot provides a little, softens it a little bit instead of having that up against the curb line as close as the zoning ordinance requires right now.
Understood.
And that condition exists with both the lot at the corner and the one below the 60,000 foot and 40,000 foot building.
And just for reference, that top building on the picture is a medical office, is that correct?
Right now, it's planned as a medical office.
And the second one down would be a retail grocery store?
The third one down would be a retail. There's the medical office, another medical office, and then the retail grocery. And then to the left, or to the right of the medical office building, the first one at the top is the office, the three-story office building along Eaton Avenue.
Understood. And can you talk about the entrances of those buildings? Because, you know, clearly the front of the buildings would be facing 8th Avenue, so the main entrance would be on that area of 8th Avenue. But
that's correct.
Are there, thank you. If you let me finish, I would just say that will there be other entrances that could be designed that may not be the front of the building, but could also be the main entrance? I think about the building that is on 3rd Avenue and West Broad Street, where the front of that building is tight to the corner of 3rd Avenue and West Broad, which is the front. However, the main entrance essentially is in the rear of the building where the parking is. And I think in that neighborhood, which is a vibrant, walkable neighborhood, I think it's a perfect fit for that neighborhood. Obviously, that building is much smaller than what you're proposing here, but I'm curious as to where the entrances would be in reference to the front of the building versus being a main entrance.
Yeah, there is one main entrance planned for these. I think, in the world we're in today, the single control point for public access to the building, there would be other exits within the building for emergency and what have you, but from the public access standpoint, there would be one control point, especially in a medical building, to make sure you've got patients coming in, you know who's coming, who's leaving, and how the flow is going. The areas that are where it's really where the blue shaded areas are, and you can see the building is set back, and you've got a few blue dots along the left-hand side of the page. That's a canopy that's been designed for vehicles to be able to pull up and provide a covered, at least rainproof area for patients who need. But sometimes it takes a little bit more time to get in and out of the vehicle. It's not a quick jump in, jump out. They need help getting in accessible vans, etc. So the main entrances will be on the public entrances will be along functioning 8th Avenue, and there would be no other public entrances planned for the buildings, again, for security. I think that's consistent with the office building that's planned as well.
Understood. Well, I just wanted to make sure I was understanding the proposal and what you were asking of council in this zoning change. I do have some other questions, but I'm interested to hear from my colleagues if they have any thoughts or questions to you or Ms. Heller at this point, because this may be one of council's only opportunities, as I said, to weigh in on the project and to gain feedback from the public as far as to what is going to happen on such an important and large parcel in the heart of Bethlehem. So I'll turn to my colleagues if they have any questions or comments for either Mr. Wagner or Ms. Heller. Mr. Klum?
Thank you, President Waldron. Just a couple quick things. Ms. Heller, can you speak a little bit to, just going off of what President Waldron was saying with the parking, in the memo that you forwarded us, the Planning Bureau supported the
two of the amendments having to do with the intersection where the traffic light is and also the minimizing the rear yard setback. But can you just speak to a little bit of the thought process behind not supporting the exception for parking?
The way the ordinance is written now, there are districts, you know, these sections come out of the design guidelines in the zoning ordinance. And there are zoning districts where we don't allow parking at all in front of the buildings. We want the parking in the front and the buildings in the front and the parking in the back. And there currently is an exemption for ONU that allows the one row of parking and one drive-by in front of the buildings. And what's proposed is that the new provision would state that this requirement does not apply at all in the ONU district. And so our comment was that, you know, there should at least be a limit on how much parking that would be. So when the Planning Commission reviewed this, they didn't have an issue with that because they looked at some of the examples that Mr. Wagner gave about other properties on 8th Avenue, but we were really looking comparatively to other zoning districts, what we do in other zoning districts, and just trying to minimize the relief. If there's a certain amount of parking that they need, then we would consider that. But the proposal really removes any limitation.
Thank you, Ms. Heller. And Mr. Wagner, to your points that were brought up when you were talking to Mr. Waldron. So where we're looking at the blue on our diagram, that's that canopy for drop-off. And, I mean, to me, anyway, it makes sense to have the front-facing on 8th Avenue. I can't think of, while we were going through the meeting, I was thinking of, like, Price Right and other, you know, other commercial structures that are along that corridor there and then other main roads throughout the city. But was any thought given to just changing the orientation of the buildings to having the main entrance, to Mr. Waldron's point, being maybe facing south? But we see where it's west on the two medical buildings, excuse me as I referenced the diagram. Yeah, on the two medical buildings and the retail building, the main entrance being situated to the west of the actual building, was there any thought given to just changing the orientation to have that main entrance facing south to accommodate leaving that as kind of a lane just for a pass-through traffic, not so much drop-off?
Yeah, that was considered, but part of the one of the other variables to that needs to be addressed as you redevelop the site is what do the users need to accomplish through their choosing this location. And as you said, Mr. Colon, as you look at other properties along this corridor and others, they front the arterial road to provide maximum visibility for their buildings. And what we've been seeing, I think you can see it throughout both health systems that we have now between St. Luke's and Lehigh Valley, they all have come up with other type buildings and designs and aesthetics that they want to maximize for their branding identity, and that's what you have with these buildings. So it's important for them to face as much outwardly as they can towards your arterial road to maximize their visibility and presence on property. That's part of the consideration of them choosing a location like this.
Understood. Thank you. And then I'm interested to hear feedback from others. One thing, so I'm not in love with the idea of adding to the setback from other lanes of parking, but as we discuss it, one of my just early thoughts is if this would be something, as we further discussions, I would want to see, to the point of Ms. Heller with the early memo, at least some kind of limitation put in the ordinance so that if it was going to be set back, that it was more defined in simply removing the language in there that limits how many rows of parking or lanes of parking, even though the intent as it's outlined in the diagrams in front of us, is not to have 50 yards of blacktop between 8th Avenue and the buildings. That's just something that, as we further the discussion and I, you know, keep trying to visualize this, I would want to see, if anything, limitations imposed on that. To the other points that we're talking about tonight, with the connecting on to the existing traffic light, I personally think that makes perfect sense. I don't have any reservations or hesitation as it relates to that, the design. And then with a question for Ms. Heller, with limiting the backyard setback from 30 feet to 20 feet, does that greatly add to the blacktop that's going to be on the 53 acres as a whole? I mean, I don't need to the square feet on the overall parcel, but what impact does that have on how much blacktop is laid over there at Martin Tower?
I don't think it has an impact on the amount of blacktop. It describes where they can put the building, but the amount of blacktop is really based on, you know, how much parking are we really looking at here? What is the footprint of these buildings? How tall are they? There's a lot of things that really go into how much and where the impervious surface is going to be on the lot.
Understood. Thank you for the clarification, Ms. Heller. Those were my only questions right now, Mr. Walter.
Thank you, Mr. Clone. Mr. Callahan?
Thank you, President Long. So, Mr. Wang, obviously the hospital that's going in there, why do they want to have their frontage on 8th Avenue? Just for advertising and for visibility?
Well, that's part of it, but it's also they have specific design criteria for their buildings, and they have prototype buildings that are part of the overall branding for the health network. So to be consistent, the front entrances are designed a certain way with a certain aesthetic, and 8th Avenue provides the most access and visibility for those buildings. And with their signage at the front of the building, as somebody's approaching along 8th Avenue, it's easily identified that that's where they're going to, rather than the back of a building or something like that.
So, and obviously, you're saying that the hospital doesn't want to have multiple entrances. They want to have, why is that? Because of security concerns?
Yeah, I think it's certainly paramount in the healthcare industry, but I think you find that in professional office buildings and other things. I think securing access points is important, and trying to direct the public to multiple access points can be challenging as well as costly, and just provides increase the potential for errors to occur.
So this building is going to be, it's basically going to be like a doctor's pavilion, right, for doctor's appointments and things like that?
Correct.
All right. So if we don't allow it, and we keep it as it is, then the people that are going there, primarily elderly people, are going to have to park in the back and walk around to the front? Is that what you're telling me?
It's two things. I think you're making the assumption that if the design cannot be accommodated to fit their requirements, that they would come here regardless. That's not the case. But secondly, yes, to answer the second part of your question, those patients will be walking from what would be the rear along Tower Drive. President Waldron, if you see that in the middle there, that arterial going up and down Tower Drive. So they would be parking near there and then walking around the parking lot to the front of the building.
As far as the question that Mr. Colon asked, so as far as the blacktop, there's not going to be, all we're doing is, if it would be passed, it's the same amount of blacktop, just there's more blacktop and parking in the front as requested versus the three lanes in the back.
That's correct. It's really shifting the parking from the east side, the rear of the building, to the west side, which would be the front of the building. It's not creating any material change in the amount of parking or the impervious coverage.
Miss
Mary, better function and flow.
Miss Heller, the building across the street from there, that's in red in the top left corner there? That's a brand new building. How did we have to vote on that before? Because they have, it looks like they have what Mr. Wagner is requesting.
The building in the northeast corner of 8th and Eaton, yes, it is set back. When that went through our office for land development, we did ask them to move that building front. We did not have an ordinance in place at the time that would allow us to require it. But we did ask them to move it front to the corner and put the parking in the back.
And the house in St. That's a St. Luke's building, right?
I'm not even sure.
It is. St. Luke's occupies it.
So the building across the street already has what Mr. Wagner is asking for. And then, Mr. Wagner, where were the other buildings that you said? I think you mentioned three other buildings already have.
If you go north on 8th Avenue, past 834 Eaton Avenue is the building we're talking about. That's the three-story building, the newest one. The
2034.
And then if you go up the street to the next building north is 1530. 8th Avenue, that's a two-story medical, or was a medical building, that's professional offices now, that has more than one row in front of it. And then when you get up to the Wawa, you see there that has the same condition where it also has more than one row of parking along 8th Avenue.
So all your neighbors, the three neighbors in consecutive buildings to the, I guess it would be the north of you, correct?
Yes.
Have what you're asking for already.
Yes, and the building on across the street, 1521 8th Avenue, has a similar condition. The building at 1469 8th Avenue building. That's behind the CVS, but you'll see the parking along 8th Avenue, which is on Ontario Road. I mean, there's 15 rows of parking between 8th Avenue and that building. And then also the Urology Associates building, which is south of the CVS, basically at that traffic light. A portion of the building comes up to 8th Avenue, but then there's a large parking lot right along 8th Avenue, again, with 10 rows of parking there. And if you continue down across the street from Martin Court, at Ruth Avenue, Martin Tower traffic light, the price rate, same thing. It's got about 10 or 12 rows of parking between the building and 8th Avenue.
So it's just the two medical office buildings that you're asking for the setback.
And the retail, and it's actually along 8th Avenue and Eaton Avenue. So it's all the buildings that would be located along there. And if you look at the plan President Waldron mentioned, you see that if you work from top to bottom, there's the three-story, 60,000-foot medical office building. Below that, it's a 40,000-foot medical office building. And below that is the one-story retail building. That's the grocery store. And then if you go along Eaton Avenue to the east, you'll see there's a lot there. That is the three-story, 40,000-foot professional office building.
So if we were to grant the extra row of parking for the elderly in the front, close to the entrance of the building, is there any type of I assume there's going to be a sidewalk put in there, but is there a walkway from the sidewalk up to the main entrance of that medical office building for residents that might be walking there from like the Kaywin Avenue area?
Oh yeah, there's sidewalks surrounding the building along the exterior of the building along 8th Avenue, and 8th Avenue, and all of the proposed rows or the planned roads interior all have sidewalks to allow pedestrian access throughout the entire site. And back to the pond, back to Burnside Plantation, it's you can walk through the whole entire 53 acres.
Well, I'm talking about like a walkway. So let's say I'm walking up 8th Avenue towards Eaton Avenue, and I'm walking on a sidewalk. Is there any type of sidewalk or walking path up into the main entrance there on the frontage of the building?
Yeah, there's a sidewalk that comes in where we're proposing the intersection, the signalized intersection connection. across from CVS, those sidewalks curve in and take you into the parking areas. But you'd have to, there's no sidewalk taking you across the parking lot,
right.
But you have access to go in there, or if you came down Martin Court, you can walk up through all the, if you're looking at the colored plan, all of the yellow lines surrounding the lots and the Eaton Avenue are all sidewalks. So the whole site is interconnected with sidewalks for any pedestrian access.
All right. Well, I appreciate your feedback on this. I personally don't have a problem with it. You know, I think if it's what the hospital is requesting for their patients, so they don't have to be walking around the back of the building and the side up, out to the front. I mean, I understand that they want their frontage there for you know, like all the other buildings that are in that whole area there. And since the buildings, the three buildings closest to it, all already have that setback, I don't see any problem with this, but you know, I'm sure we'll have more discussion about it. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Dr. Binwer?
Thank you. I have a couple of questions. I think this would be for Ms. Heller or Ms. Carner, and then if for some reason they couldn't answer, then perhaps Mr. Wagner could help out. My first question is, you know, whenever I come across a privately requested zoning text amendment change, my guard goes up. Zoning text amendment change usually come from the city, and it's because there's been something that's been well planned and well thought out. This is coming from a private entity, and so my question really, Ms. Heller, is why are we not going the usual route, which people want to do when they have a site-specific problem that doesn't mesh with the zoning code? They go to the zoning hearing board and ask for a variance. And I did read that there is an efficiency issue here because of the number, but at the same time, that doesn't obviate the need that perhaps the best route for this to go through is actually the zoning hearing board with variance requests.
It's certainly an option, but honestly, because it would apply to at least a few, maybe several properties, it didn't really, I can understand why the owner would not think that was a very efficient way to address the question. It's true that would be an option, but you know, the project, the overall parcel is going to be subdivided into many parcels.
Okay, and then there was a statement that Mr. Wagner made about the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission supporting this request, and I guess I was hoping you could help illuminate that, because I have in front of me a letter dated April 7th referring to two upcoming meetings, one today and one in 2 days, but they, beyond those two meetings, I'm just going to read this for the benefit of everybody out in the public who may not have access to it. It says, the privately proposed zoning ordinance amendment refers specifically to a property located at 1178th Avenue, a key redevelopment site that is one of the most accessible locations in the region. The amendments are intended for a specific site, but the proposal would affect the entirety of the OMU zoning district and any properties that may be zoned as OMU in the future, which I think is a critical point. Because the proposed amendment, if adopted, would affect more than one property, and this zoning amendment proposal is directly related to a development plan for a specific site, the LVPC recommends developers seek a variance from the Bethlehem Zoning Hearing Board, where the Pennsylvania Municipality's Planning Code directs requests for relief. So I did not interpret that as full support, but perhaps there was something yesterday that I'm not aware of.
Yeah, if Darlene, if you want to answer that, go ahead.
Or, no, if you have, well, no, this is the one that they...
Yeah, the reason for my statement of support was they had their meeting at noon today, and they voted, they made a motion to support the amendment. As far as I understood it on the call, it was an amendment, I think it passed 4-1 or something like that. I didn't see... my understanding was they supported the amendment, the amendment request of their committee.
What they made a motion to support was that this letter would be forwarded to the full commission. So they supported this letter, is what they voted.
Okay.
Thank you for clarifying that. It seems like we need a little bit more data from the Planning Commission themselves. And then, again, there's members of the public who are watching that may not have access to everything. So I just wanted to make sure that we were clear that the Planning Department did not, our City Planning Department did not support the parking request here. And the sentence, not to put you on the spot, Ms. Heller, but the sentence is, the Planning Bureau does not support the exemption from the requirement to limit the amount of parking between the front lot line and a principal building, especially because the proposed text amendment completely exempts the requirement and provides no upper limit. So if this were to pass, theoretically, we could have what looks like the Kohl's with, you know, 20 rows of parking in front of it. Now, that might not be what's actually built, but we have lost control the minute we approve this zoning text amendment. I guess overall what I'd like to say is I feel that Bethlehem is not where we were in 1994. This city is now in a position of strength, and I feel that there's a golden mean that we have to find where we have appropriate development that respects our zoning code, that respects our walkability, and our need to de-emphasize motor travel of transportation, and to especially try and decrease the sea of asphalt that we see from our roads. We want development to happen at Martin Tower, but not at the expense of our zoning and our quality of life, and I feel like we must try harder. I fully expect when developers come to our administration and Department of Community and Economic Development that every single effort will be made to ensure that not only do the new developments respect our historic districts, our zoning codes, our walkability, but also we'll negotiate with the developer prior to coming for any requests to obtain the very best deal and the maximum benefit for the citizens, not the developer. This is what I expect of the administration, and City Council, I believe, will hold to these standards. And I feel like there really is a solution here, and it's called good design. And I think that's what we need to be asking of our developers before they come and ask for exemptions to our zoning code. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. Mr. Reynolds?
Yes. So a couple things. One is, I think that, you know, first I would say I understand we're dealing with something that an end user wants here. And I know my wife happens to work for Lehigh Valley Health Network, and I know whenever I go to her at work, there's about, you know, 20% of their spaces are being used and about 80% are not. And I know that's the end user that is requesting that. But I think that when we take a look at this and we're looking at the 53 acres, I think there's a lot of questions. And I don't think it's necessarily when we look at this particular part and how it necessarily affects it, but there's questions about, and maybe we can answer some of them today, is about like the timeline of the rest of the development, what it's gonna look like. When we had that conversation, you know, 6-7 years ago, whenever that was, and it really came down to two kind of, what I thought were two parts, like, should the tower stay up, and yes or no, and then also what does it look like afterwards? And we are here now with the zoning that exists, partly because there were fears about competition, everything else, and whatever. But what it is about now is how do we get the best development there possible? And I think the challenge for a lot of us on City Council and the public is understanding, and this is not just about this particular issue, but how do we as a city, between the private property owner, the administration, City Council, and the community, get to that point where we get the maximum best development that we can? Because nothing is done in a vacuum. And we understand there have been questions here today about how this necessarily affects other things. And I think one of the things that people aren't sure about or lack confidence in is that kind of big plan or the challenge to see how this is going to affect the rest of the site. And I know that part of the reason we're here is because there are requests from the end user. I know that it's not something that in a perfect situation we would be here to talk about. But when we think about the end users that we represent, whether or not it's whatever public policy priorities there are, I think one of the things that City Council has questions about is, Ms. Heller and Ms. Corner, you have discussed, and I'm not sure if the mayor is around or not here, is you've discussed different things that you want to see over these 53 acres, which is really, as we've talked about before, one of the, there's not too many places in Bethlehem where you have 53 acres, and you've talked about different things that you want to see on this site. And we understand that the end user here, Lehigh Valley Health Network, is looking for this relief to be able to have their buildings. But what is, I guess the question I would have for you, Ms. Heller, Ms. Corner, is like, what are your feelings on how you are going to be, or how the city is going to be able to see their priorities for the site come to fruition or be included? Not just here and going forward, because there's uncertainty. I know we got a lot of communication from different people about how would this fit in with different aspects of the site, and quite frankly, we don't have a lot of answers as far as how it would, because I understand things are moving and stuff like that. But I guess I would turn to Ms. Heller and Ms. Carter to kind of talk about, you know, how do you see the priorities that people have mentioned before to make this the best development possible? When are those going to get addressed?
So I think the mayor had unmuted himself and was going to step in and make a comment.
Yeah, Mr. President, may I make a comment on that, please?
Yes, Mr. Mayor.
Okay, thank you. I agree with many of the points that have been made here this evening, and there are several things that I would like to see looking at the whole site of 53 acres that were important to me when we reviewed the master plan, which I think probably was around 2019, sometime in March or April of 2019, and I think they're still relevant and important today. Parking issue has come up, needless to say, and I would hope that looking at the whole project that there would be opportunities for shared parking. I said it back in 2019, I still believe it. I think, you know, the amount of impervious coverage on the site, I would like to see be reduced, just quite a bit, needless to say. I think it's important to create, you know, maximum opportunities on the site for safe bike and pedestrian infrastructure, because we're a walkable community. We've been emphasizing that a lot the last several years. The replacement of lost tree canopies is important. The view shed of historic Burnside Plantation, and improvement of the stormwater issues that would impact that site are an important issue. Many people use the trails. We're being considered for a World Heritage Site. It kind of all ties in with our historic nature in a sense. The enhancement of the trail network, including the Monocacy Way to the east and the trail network to the south with the unused Norfolk Southern Trail, you know, we said was important going back to 2019. But the, you know, enhanced green space and recreation opportunities, because there will be a significant number of people living on the 53 acres. Now, the number of apartments has been reduced, but you do want green space and you do want recreational opportunities. And then there's going to be a lot of Chris acreage that will not be used, and it would be important, I think, for the developer to consider decertifying it for the city to use on other projects. I said that back, going back probably to 2015 when we were talking about the Boyd project. And then an issue that's come up in the last 6-7 months with many members of council, led by Councilwoman Grace Francis Smith, you know, affordable housing is a very important issue today. And we have an affordable housing commission, and they'll be making recommendations. And, you know, I think that's an important issue today, citywide. We see it in other communities, and it's still an important issue to me. And so those are my concerns, almost an exact, you know, repeat of going back to when we looked at the master plan, Councilman Reynolds, back in 2019.
Thank you, Mr. Donches. So I guess I would turn then to Ms. Heller and Ms. Carner. Mr. Donches just laid out different ideas, thoughts, priorities. None of us are planners. None of us are, you know, work full-time for the city of Bethlehem. And I guess my question would be kind of an educational one, is how do you do you feel, or where in that process of development, and I mean, I understand, like, developing 53 acres at one time is just not going to happen, but there are legitimate questions about how, where in the process do those priorities, I guess, where do they get addressed?
So let me take the grid issue and the affordable housing issue, and I'll defer to Darlene on the planning comments. But the grid conversation with the mayor said it's something that the mayor has had with the ownership going back to 2015, probably 2014. You know, when you see a site of this size that has deep slopes, that has a plan for public streets, that has a lot of parking, parking lots in particular, throughout the site, and if you recall, the council supported a zoning amendment specific to CRIS projects a couple of years ago that allowed us to peel off the parking. We didn't have to use CRIS for things that didn't produce increment. And so I do think it's important to have continue that conversation as the site develops to ensure that there is opportunity to move that acreage around, decertifying something that we know isn't going to be used, you know, once those subdivisions occur. I think it's an important step for the city to take, an important pledge for the property owner to make to the city, because the use of that acreage is going to be important for other projects. We've posted stamp sized parcels throughout the city that could potentially benefit from something like this, specifically in our downtowns. So I think that is, you know, I want to reassure council that it's been an ongoing conversation, as the mayor said, for a number of years. And I would hope we continue to evolve with the ownership over the next couple of years as the subdivisions occur, as the streets develop, as the parking, you know, develops. Certainly affordable housing is an extremely important issue. We had the Community Development Committee meeting a couple of weeks ago, and I think we all agreed that we're at a point of crisis with affordable housing. And so we're seeing more and more within the development community step up and pledge to do some percentage of units as affordable. We don't have the ability necessarily to say you must do this, but to encourage and request it, I think, is an important step that was not part of our conversation when I started with the city in 2014 to specifically ask about affordable housing. And I will say, with this developer that has been part of the conversation in the last 6 months, certainly not something that I think anybody is, you know, in a position to make commitments to or announce, but we will encourage, as the administration, the continued inclusion of housing that is affordable, so that we are, you know, providing opportunity for residents of all different income and family size throughout the city.
I can just comment on some of the land use items that the mayor listed. I believe that each of those were listed in our comment letter back in April of 2019, when we commented on the general master plan that was forwarded to our office at that time. It was also a substantial amount of public feedback and comment, and I think that the items that the mayor listed here were really in keeping with much of the public comment that we also received. And I think you're all aware that we just enacted a climate action plan, and many of these comments are in keeping with the recommendations of the climate action plan as well. And some of them are interrelated. You know, the reduction of the impervious coverage is kind of goes along with the reduced parking and creating opportunities for shared parking, and all of that is really because it's often unnecessary and because we want to become more walkable, more bikeable. There's trails right there, there's transit. We want to become less car oriented, but then that also allows us to add more green space to the parcel. There was a huge tree canopy on the parcel originally, and we'd like to see that replaced if, you know, as the project moves forward. So a lot of that is interconnected. We've always had discussions about protection of Burnside. It's very important historic site in the city, and you know, we continue to keep that at the front of discussions as well. There are limitations within the zoning ordinance, and there is a tree buffer there that we will continue to maintain. You asked about timeline. Really, I I believe, and you know, I really shouldn't speak on this, I think at the Planning Commission, there was a question about when a project would be submitted. I think there was some intention to submit maybe later this summer or at some point during this calendar year. And we really have to start commenting on those things lot by lot as the parcel is subdivided. But the more important thing is to really look at a master plan and ensure that all of these goals and objectives are reflected in the master plan, you know, before we get to a point where there are individual parcels subdivided and things like that.
Yep. Mr. Reynolds, go.
Mr. Alden, thank you. Okay, so then I'm going to ask this again, Ms. Eller and Ms. Carter. So I understand that you just, and I understand what Mr. Donch said, and I understand what you repeated about your conversations and your discussions. But that's not, it's not what I asked for, and it's not what I'm looking for. So what happens when those conversations do not work out? What happens when those discussions don't work out? What happens to make sure those things are priorities? Because I sat through a lot of those climate action plan meetings, and I'm going to be honest with the two of you, is that you sit through those meetings and you hear about the different priorities and you hear it's going to be included here, but then the actual process by which that gets carried out. So if, you know, if I was the developer, Ms. Carter, and you asked me to do something, or you said these are things that are important to our community that come up in comments and so on and so forth, and I said that that's not something I'm comfortable with doing, that's not something I want to do, what is it that the city is able to do? Because we get questions all the time about how to make sure that these priorities happen. Everybody wants to see that site developed. We need to get the site developed. We need to get, you know, we need to get Leavelle Hospital in there. We need to do those things. But there are bigger questions here about how these priorities are going to get carried out here. And I think everybody here has asked similar types of questions that if we approve this, and then we come back 3 months, 6 months, 9 months down the road, and I don't even put this on the person coming to do the development as much as it is on the city and the city administration, that when we approve something or don't approve something or whatever it is, that there is a plan to get these priorities carried out. So I will ask again then, what is it that you are able to do if I was the developer and I said, I don't want to do these things?
So just to use another project as an example, the South New Street project, which I know hasn't come before this body yet, but potentially will with a certificate of appropriateness. What we typically do is sit down with the developer and they'll make a commitment to us and we'll publicly support that, we'll publicly support that, we'll jointly talk about the commitment that's being made. A lot of times we take them at their word. And so I would say that when dealing with things like Chris Acreage decertification or dealing with affordable housing, you know, having the developer, the property owner, commit publicly to partnering with the city to achieve mutual goals is a step, and that, you know, it is really what we rely on.
Thank you, Mr. Spurk. I have a question for you. Is that something that council is able to do or not?
Mr. Spurk, we're having audio. Mr. Spurk, we're not able to hear you.
Maybe he can call in.
Give him a little bit.
I just got it. Sorry.
Mr. Spurk, we can see you and you're unmuted. Are you able to?
Can you hear me?
Yes, there you're back. Thank you.
The affordability is the issue. If council were to say, well, we'll vote for this, but only if you promise to do that, the problem with that is you could not enforce the promise. Because it's council that actually does zoning, not the administration, right? They have to come to council to get the approvals. So if council were to say, well, we're going to vote for whatever the developer happens to want because we're relying on your promise to put a medical office building and not a retail store or something like that. And then later the developer, not suggesting that any particular developer would, but the developer reneges on the promise, council would be powerless to enforce the promise because you can't zone your council, you can't zone and then later enforce a promise. That's the council's role. Administration, however, as Ms. Carner outlined, they don't have the final say in zoning, so the interactive process she was describing, which goes on in many conversations with many priorities and many commitments, is the proper place for that kind of thing, if that answered your question.
It does. That we're not allowed, City Council can't come up with that list of priorities and say, I believe that's what you're saying, Mr. Spurk, is that we are unable to do that.
Yeah, you can't enforce it. Yeah. You can do it.
But we can't enforce it.
That would be contract zoning. You run the risk of contract zoning, and you would have the inability to do anything about it afterwards.
Yeah. But the administration, because through the various comments that have been made today by members of City Council, and I think other people have been waiting to speak as well, so I will stop talking at this point, is that it's the ability of the city to get its priorities done here, because as I said, we want to see this site redeveloped, but we also want to make it the highest quality development possible and one that fits in with the rest of our public policy goals, is that the administration and the planning department and community economic development in particular are the ones that are able to, and I guess also it comes down to whether or not there's also only so much they're able to do as far as trying to encourage support, say we're not going to support projects in the future, and so on and so forth. But I think that's where a lot of these questions are coming from, is that this is in front of us. We want to see the best possible development here. And there's been a long list of things that people in the community are looking for, that we're looking for, and there are just some questions about how necessarily we're going to achieve that goal, which is the end user goal on the public policy side. So with that being said, I will stop talking for now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. Mr. Callahan, I know you want to speak, but I want to give other members of council who haven't weighed in that opportunity, then I'll circle back around. Ms. Cramsey-Smith?
Thank you. Thank you very much. I just have some questions. First of all, regarding the parking, I guess my concern is, I do concur with Dr. Van Hoort that right now, what I'm reading is the city really encourages limited parking in front of buildings. And if we approve this amendment, we would go from the limit of one to unlimited. So that would give a lot of freedom to the developer. It is a little concerning with the parking, but I guess I would ask you, Mr. Wagner, I'm wondering about the parking in the front, why it must be in the front, because one of my concerns is, I know my doctor's office is on Eaton Avenue, and there's no parking in the front, and we go around the back of the building, and I think it works out very well, and the main entrance is in the back of the building. I guess I'm wondering, why can't the main entrance be in the back of the building, because I want to see this develop, but I think one thing we have to worry about is traffic. I mean, I don't live too far from here. Traffic already over in this area during rush hour is pretty heavy, and it's going to be a lot heavier. And I'm thinking, if people are coming in off 8th Avenue going into the building, and they're going to be making a right away to go and parking in the front of the building, is that going to be safer than having them proceed and go to the back of the building and making that the entrance? And nothing against our elderly citizens, but I'm thinking, for a lot of them, they may need to drive slower, and they may have more of a difficult time navigating and having to turn right into a parking lot first and going around to the back of the parking lot from a safety perspective. The other thing I'm thinking of is, can we see a backup on each avenue if we have parking in the front?
Well, the parking's all contained on the interior of the site, so I don't think you'll have an issue backing up on 8th Avenue, because it's right in going north on 8th Avenue, and there's also access points off of Eaton Avenue, and the signalized intersection at 8th Avenue I think would also help mitigate traffic issues there. Relative to the accessibility around the parking, around the building, I think there's better circulation having multiple drive aisles throughout the property, rather rather than having, if you look at the plan on the left-hand side of the page, that's where the drop-off is on the upper left corner. That whole blue area there is really designated as a drop-off safety zone for people pulling up, dropping off patients, young or old, that may be immobilized or having mobility issues, that it provides a safe pullover to be out of the area. If you look at the plan on the right-hand side of the page, you'll see that there's a whole separate drive aisle outside of the canopy drop-off area. Again, I think provides parking more distributed around the building and more in the front for those patients to get into the building. The canopy and drop-off area for patient services is a important part, integral part of their design for patient safety. And again, I think with the two access points to the building, that can provide some confusion as well as increase the likelihood of disoriented patient activity. If they know the front of the building is where they go in, they're not going to be looking for an access point at the back of the building. So hopefully that helps. It's really to simplify the access points and flow of traffic within the building.
Thank you. I understand. I guess I just think about the fact that it's so close, the parking is going to be so close to 8th Avenue that you're going to have to turn in and then turn into parking right away versus would it be easier to go around the building to park. Some other questions I have is, I'm wondering about more specifics regarding the plan. I mean, at what point in time will we be given more specifics? For example, I know it's two medical buildings, it's the office buildings. What kind of restaurants are we looking at? What kind of retail are we looking at? And I also am wondering with the office buildings, because I know some of my friends are working in offices that, you know, they built Taj Mahals only a few years ago, and now they're working remotely. And I think it's pretty apparent that, you know, we're seeing in the news that because of COVID, more and more people are working remotely, and we're going to be seeing possibly some empty office spaces, you know, in the future. And I'm wondering how that plays out with this development.
Yeah, thank you. That's a good question. Part of what we're dealing with here, and I know it's been brought up several times, that we're seeking relief for a specific lot, and that's not really the case. What we're trying to accomplish is the text amendment to allow for for lack of a better term, correction or modification to the existing zoning to allow us to continuing the planning of the site. Two buildings or three buildings along 8th Avenue really are the most critical or the linchpin lots to the development, because they really set where the interior roads go and where the rest of the development can be placed, the rest of the buildings can be placed. The parking is important, because if we're not able to provide a design option for end users, and as you said, with the office space situation right now, the virtual offices and some of the vacancies you're seeing, the medical office side has been a consistent good product to have that doesn't have the empty office issues that you see in typical general office, professional office space where people continue to work from home. It's hard to get treatment at home. The challenge we have is, without being able to commit or get an amendment passed to allow this parking modification, we can't continue with the development of these lots for those uses, because they will not materialize. So that puts us back at square one. We're trying to redesign the site for different uses that go in there. So it could turn into a bit of a vicious cycle of not being able to put these tenants here. Again, a grocery store in this location, I think, is a great use. The medical office buildings continue what's already happened along the entire 8th Avenue corridor. From Wawa down to 378, it's filled with medical use, and this becomes the medical hub of the west side or the west side of Bethlehem. People already come there. I think it continues what's already been developed around this property. But as far as what else is going to go in the property, we have some things conceptually laid out here, but again, we're going to work from the northwest corner of the site into the site, and without being able to stick the flag in these several lots here, we have to go back to the drawing board. And I believe Mr. Reynolds may have asked earlier, the timing for the development, and as Ms. Heller said, we're looking to have plans submitted to the city this calendar year. But that's all predicated upon being able to proceed with the plan that we have designed. That is, of course, subject to the zoning amendment that we've requested. So they all sort of play a hand in the bigger picture. We can't get to the end, the finish line of what we're trying to design without knowing what we can start with. And that's why we're starting with this text amendment request, which will really be the catalyst for this development all along 8th Avenue to begin.
Thank you. So at this point in time, do you have any specifics regarding the retail space and the restaurants?
Not yet. We haven't pushed on that. We have the grocery store we're talking to this site is laid out with their apartment type store. And again, that sits, if you look in the lower left corner, you see there's an angle on the, there's a angle on that building. That is based on their design, and that's their main entrance. It would be facing Martin Court and 8th Avenue. Again, that exposure to the 8th Avenue corridor is of critical importance to the end users, especially at this location with the traffic the visibility that's provided for. As these get developed, we'll be able to then begin defining what the remaining lots will look like, where the roads will go, and that's also we'll be able to have the conversations with the with restaurants, retailers, and other users to commit to the site.
All right, thank you. And I want to thank the mayor and Mrs. Carter for bringing up the issue that I am always going to bring up, and that's housing that is inclusionary and affordable. And it is disappointing that there isn't going to be any housing in here. I mean, it looks like there is going to be a hotel. Is that correct, Mr. Wagner? The hotel is not going to be a part of it?
This is an enlargement of a portion of the site. If you look along the right-hand side, you'll see some other buildings. There are apartments planned along the east side of the property, along Burnside. They would be in consideration of the view shed and the design criteria that was set forth. They're all compatible with that. To protect the view shed of Burnside.
And will they be considered affordable rates, do you know?
No, they're going to be a standard market, like similar to what's across the street at Woodmont Views, those are market rates.
That are like high-end luxury apartments or condos?
We refer to them as market rate. We don't really get into the high-end luxury because I don't, you know, everybody, that means something different to everybody. So, you know, my color palette may not be luxury to you.
Sure. Right. It is all relative for sure. So a couple issues, I guess. This is a office mixed use zone, and that is designed for dense development, which in my mind would be great for housing. And I think that you pretty much have to be living in a cave lately if you don't see it all over the news that we do have a housing crisis in the country, in the state, in the city. And it's just getting worse, especially with COVID. People cannot find houses that they can afford. The housing market is very limited at this point in time, and one out of three households in the Lehigh Valley are cost burdened, meaning they're paying more than 30% of their income on rent and mortgages. So my other concern that goes into this is this is a CRIS area, 53 acres of CRIS, and I feel that, you know, we're using state and local tax money for the benefit of development, and we certainly want and need development, but I feel that it's our duty as a city and a community and our administration. I really would encourage you to look into what can we do to promote and encourage housing that is inclusionary for all income levels within this city, because I think that it's only fair to our taxpayers who are using their state and local tax money to offset development. And I think that we need to assure that money goes back into, put back into the greatest benefit for the entire community. And I think, and I've said it before, and I know that Mrs. Carter said we're fortunate to work with some developers who are considering helping us with this issue. And I think that it's something we need to really pursue, that we do, you know, housing that is affordable, or if not, that developers are willing to give a fee in lieu of to a housing trust fund, especially if they're going to be given the advantage of something such as CRIS. So that being said, that's my only comments and questions. I just really hope that we are, you know, up and kept in the loop as far as what this development is going to look like going forward with more specifics. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Negron?
Mr. Walton, can I make a point of order real quick?
What's that, Mr. Callahan?
I'm just trying to protect everybody, I hope. And if I'm wrong, I apologize. I would ask Mr. Spurt. I thought it was, I'm not sure we want to be talking about a quick pro quos with these, I don't know why the Chris Acreage is coming up with this in a zoning meeting. I thought that when we went through the ethics training with this state, that gentleman, I remember him specifically talking about that you can't, when it comes to zoning issues, and if I'm wrong, I apologize, but Mr. Spurk, from what I remember from that ethics training, you can't tell someone when it comes to zoning, I'll give you this zoning if you do this. And this is the third time I've heard, Dr. Van Wert and Ms. Carter and another councilwoman here talk about Chris Acreage in lieu of getting the zoning. I'm not sure we want to go down that path. If I'm wrong, I apologize, but I thought that was pretty plain and clear when we went through the ethics training that you, especially when it comes to zoning, you can't say, we'll give you this when it comes to zoning if you give us this. So I'm just cautioning everybody to hold tight and be very careful what you're saying about that. So,
Mr. Callahan, I will allow Mr. Spurk to respond, but I have not heard anyone from council say that they would approve the zoning change if Chris Acreage was awarded. I have heard them prioritize the fact that is a consideration when we're doing such a large development to think about the Chris Acreage, much like it is green space, walkability, and affordable housing. I think this is our role as council members to advocate on behalf of smart development within our community and say these are things that need to be prioritized and hope that the administration would force the developer to help prioritize some of those needs that members of council who are being asked to approve a zoning change, as well as members of the public, have advocated for in the past. So I don't believe there's been any conversation about a quid pro quo, but I will turn to Mr. Spurk for more clarification.
Mr. Callahan, I think more than the presentation by the Ethics Commission, we're probably recollecting conversations that we had about this notion of contract zoning. The Pennsylvania courts have created this doctrine of contract zoning. They say, you should zone based on the interests of the whole community at large. Zoning should be something meant to last for long periods of time and to consider the broad view. Zoning shouldn't be something tailored to a specific project or a specific end user, just because that doesn't necessarily reflect looking at the broad view like zoning is supposed to. So to enforce that, the courts have made up this doctrine called contract zoning, which says, for example, if you zone for a particular developer who's going to put in, let's say, a medical office building, and you approve zoning for that particular end use, and then the developer puts a barber shop there, the courts say, you know what, counsel? Nothing you can do about it. You zoned for a specific small end user when you should have been looking at the whole community. So the way we're going to discourage you from doing that is we're going to say, if the developer reneges on what you zoned for, there's nothing you can do about it. That's the concept of contract zoning. And that's why, as council, you could try to exact promises and commitments all you want, but if the developer reneges, there's nothing you can do about it. So the courts would say, you shouldn't zone that way. We're going to discourage you from zoning that way, site-specific. You should be looking at the broad picture.
And Mr. Spurk, have you heard any conversation that would make you think we've crossed that line this evening?
No, and I've really been listening carefully.
Thank you, Mr. Spurk. I'll turn back to Ms. Negron.
Thank you, President Waldron. You know, it's funny, I'm usually the last one to speak. and right now, I have to say I'm a little frustrated. After listening to everybody speak, I am a little disappointed because I when I saw the public hearings, the request for a change, I was expecting that there was going to be a presentation sharing a little more about what's going to happen in the rest of the parcel. So it's funny that everybody's talking about this. It was just making me even more frustrated because it's like, yeah, we needed to hear something more. And, you know, with all due respect to the developers, to Mr. Wagner and Mr. Rocca, we, you know, you work with the city and you sit down with them and with Ms. Heller, Ms. Garner, and the mayor and talk about the plans and take some pictures or design. We don't do that, you know. We only know about it when it comes right here in front of us. And, you know, you might have been having that conversation already about what's going to happen in the rest of the year, but we have no idea. And then we have to report to the rest of members of the community that voted for us, right? And they're asking the same questions that we've been asking. But what else is going to happen? I'm really glad that Dr. Van Wert talked about good, smart building and development, and I really appreciated what Councilman Reynolds mentioned, that, you know, we really just wonder, you know, what else, and we wonder, and people are asking us as well, and here we are with a request, a special request, and we still don't know nothing else. I agree 100%, and I say thank you to Councilwoman Smith, Grace Smith, because what she said, you know, since I started here in council, I was the one speaking up about the crisis we have with housing, with affordable housing, and I was even asked a question by some members of council. You know, we have plenty of affordable housing. We have Pembroke, we have Linfield, we have those. That's not affordable housing, you know. Affordable housing means we need to have enough apartments, enough housing for the people that are working in the building that you're trying to build. The people that are working for Lehigh Valley Hospital, the clerks, the technicians, you know, they're going to need a place to live, and they won't be able to afford it. So that is affordable housing. It's for the working class. We're not asking you to do free housing. We're not asking you to charge half of the price. Affordable. People that only make, you know, that make under $40,000 a year are able to live in. So that is what the desire, you know, the wish of council is, and we cannot make that happen. But again, I am saying I am frustrated because I was expecting to hear a little more about what's going to happen in the future, and I'm hoping that when we come back in May, there might be more information for us. I'm also concerned about the point that Dr. Van Wert mentioned, that the Planning Commission, the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission, was not really, you know, it wasn't really an okay from their side. I also appreciate a good point that Councilwoman Grace Smith said, that you know, the building could be, you know, we had the buildings around it that are built the way you are asking were there before the ordinance existed. So why was the ordinance changed? I think there was a good reason why that ordinance was changed. And I think that, like Councilwoman said, the building could be like it's supposed to be closer to the sidewalk, closer to the edge, and have the entrance of the building behind the building. So people are going to park and they're going to go right there. You know, you make it something a little more complicated than it should be. I think she made a very good point that either main entrance is behind the building where the parking is. Who's going to wander around the building where there's no door? You know, there's a lot of buildings out in our community that are like that. So anyway, I just hope that we have a little more information when we're talking again about this in May. Thank you, President Wong.
Dr. Van Wert.
Thank you. I just wanted to mention there. Included in council documents, and Mr. Vidoni, if you could make sure I'm correct in saying this, included in the publicly accessible documents for this meeting tonight is a really thorough synopsis of some of the concerns about this plan and about this request that was put together for the Coalition for Appropriate Transportation by Scott Slingerland. It's 7 pages long. It has maps and photographs, and it's really, you know, it's not confrontational. It's very, comes forward with lots of really good ideas, but also lots of really good concerns. So I would encourage any citizen who's interested in what's happening at Martin Tower to read this document, to access it. If you can't, email me, I'll send it to you. It's really a very thorough and amazingly well thought out document. And he kind of outlines a number of different concerns, but one of them is the creation of a future Martin Tower spur trail that connects 8th Avenue to Monocacy Creek Path. It's very well thought out and well done. And then he also brings up concerns about land use, understanding that this current 53-acre footprint site right now has a is going to be covered with 30 acres of asphalt. And I just think that's a profound amount of asphalt. And this is a fairly fixed, I mean, I know there's some fluctuations in, you know, curb cuts and what's going to go there, but other than that, I feel like this is a fairly fixed plan, and those 30 acres are real. And I just wanted the public to be able to have what we have. That's a really well thought out plan. He's also asking for clarification of green areas on the plans for a stormwater management. How are we handling it besides the runoff pond, about stuff that might flow into Monocacy Creek, which is one of our treasures? And then also suggested improvements to Monocacy Way Trail crossing at Shanersville. So, Mr. Bodoni, is this document from the CAT available on the City of Bethlehem website under our documents for the meeting tonight?
It's not. It wasn't an official document. It was sent to, okay. I believe it was sent to council, and I forget who else was on that. I think some members of the administration, but it's not an official document such that.
And how would a member of the public obtain this if they wanted to have this perspective?
The normal channel is a right to know request.
Okay, I'm allowed to send it out as well if someone emails me.
So any member of council would be able to share it.
Happy to send it out. That's all. Thank you very much. I just wanted to thank Mr. Slingerland for putting this together. It's really well done and a service to the community.
Thank you, Dr. Van Wert. Are there any other questions or comments from members of council? So, in my perspective here, as we kind of close up our public hearing before we move to public comment on this, is hearing a lot of the same comments from members of council, as this is our real first public opportunity to weigh on this project. And I think we all have an understanding of what the developer is asking in this zoning change of council. But I also hear some of the same issues: walkability, trail connections, green space, impervious coverage in the form of parking, affordable housing, and CRIS. And I've heard some feedback from the administration, including the mayor, saying that these are priorities of his as well. And I would be interested to know if the administration and the developer would be willing to sit down and talk about some of those priorities and get those in writing, so that way members of the public would have a better understanding of what they could expect down the line. Because right now we don't really have an idea of what this project's going to look like other than these pictures that are in front of us. And I'm not overwhelmingly encouraged by what I'm seeing thus far, regardless of the zoning changes being asked of us. And I think it's our role as council to give feedback and help represent the community and say these are things that are important based on conversations that we've had with members of the public that have been ongoing for years. And I think it's the role of the administration to advocate on behalf and try to prioritize those things and work with the developer on what is feasible and what is something that can be accomplished when we develop such a large tract of land. So is there a possibility that I'll turn, I guess, to Ms. Carner or Mr. Donchez to continue those conversations and get some of those priorities down in writing?
Mr. President, the administration is always willing to sit down with the developer and meet.
And is that something that we could get these in writing so that way we and members of the public would understand what the priorities are for such a large and important project?
Well, if the developer would agree to the priorities, the answer is yes. We certainly, I think, share a lot of common ground with members of council with the discussion tonight, so I think meeting is important.
That's good, because it's not the ability of council to say that these are things that must happen. It's not our role. Our role is to take a look at what's in front of us and improve or deny it. But we can advocate on behalf of some of those priorities that I think are important to all the community. And I think not only having a verbal commitment, as Mr. Reynolds discussed, in the past we've had conversations about other development where we've heard developers say that it is a priority, and then those things often get forgotten about unless we have something in writing that can be reminded and the public can hold those developers accountable. So I would hope that maybe those conversations could continue in the next 2 weeks before we have our first reading, which is scheduled for the May 4th council meeting, first reading of the ordinance. Is there any other... Yes, Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I have to commend you for that statement. I'm glad, thank you for doing so. I appreciate it. Also, I forgot to say it before, what Ms. Heller, Ms. Turner, and Mayor Donches say, because I know that that's the way you feel. You have shared that with us before, but it was an important moment to share that what is priorities for the administration. But thank you, President Waldron, for making that statement. I hope that this actually comes to fruition when we get together again and talk about this in May. Thank you.
Thank you. At this point, I will open up public comment for anyone who would like to make comment on the specific item at hand, which is a zoning text request by the property owner related to the OMU, Office Mixed-Use Zoning District at the Martin Tower site at 1178th Avenue, to permit additional parking to be placed between a building and the curb line of an arterial street. If there's any member of the public who'd like to make comment on this public hearing on this sole topic, the number to do so is 610-997-7963. In short order, we will have other opportunity for members of the public to comment on additional topics. At this point, this will be our last call for public comment on the second public hearing this evening.
President Warner, can I ask one quick question after this, please?
Yes, go ahead, Mr. Callahan.
I want to make sure that I understood this correctly. Someone had mentioned earlier that if we approve this, that there's the possibility that the developer could go back as far as he wanted, kind of like a Target, situation. And I would not be in favor of that. And I just want to make sure that if we approved it, isn't there a way we can stipulate clearly that it's not allowed to have a Target situation where it's 100 yards, 150 yards, the building's 150 yards back, that it's only this one additional parking lane allowed? Isn't there a way we can stipulate that if it did pass?
As the ordinance is presented to us, it would require an amendment, but I do believe we have the ability to limit the proposal to what is in front of us and not allow for additional depth. I see Mr. Spurk nodding in agreement. If any member of the administration has additional comments, we'd accept those. But we do have ability to amend the amendment that has been given to us, essentially.
So as it's written right now, if it passed, they could set it back as far as they wanted. Is that correct?
That is my understanding.
Ms. Heller, is that true? Or Ms. Carter?
I think what they're asking is that the provision that the OMU zoning district be exempted from the provision. So there would be no limit.
Well, why would it come to us without no limit?
That's what they submitted. It's their draft.
That would be a question for the developer, Mr. Callahan.
I'm sorry, Mr. Waldron.
That would be a question for the developer. This text amendment was not generated by the administration. It was written by the developer. So all the speculations, all the specifics, that is, are that of the developer. So any reason for something included or excluded from this would be a question for the developer.
Okay, thank you.
Any other additional questions or comments from members of council? Seeing none, the second public hearing is adjourned and the zoning text amendment will be listed on the May 1st council agenda for first reading.
Thank you. Thank you for coming this evening.
Thank you, Mr. Wagner. Moving on with our agenda this evening, seeking approval of the minutes for March 16th, 2021. If there's no comments from members of council, the minutes will stand approved. Moving back to public comment on any subject not being voted on this evening, we have two names previously signed up. Jackson Igme and Ed Gallagher. I'll call those two individuals in that order and then turn it over to other members of the public who'd like to make comment. The number to do so this evening is 610-997-7963.
Hello, this is Jackson.
Good evening, this is Bethlehem City Council calling.
Hi, thank you for taking the time tonight.
Sure, if you please state your name and address for the record and proceed with your comments to council with a 5-minute time limit.
Yep, I'm Jackson Amy of 1503 Creek Road, Bethlehem, Pennsylvania. And the reason for me joining tonight is to request approval for a renovation project at 409-411 Wyandotte Street. Just a little background, I was born and raised in Bethlehem. I have a deep love for the town and history. I took my senior year off from college this past year to do this project, and got as far as getting an approval from the Pennsylvania Department of Community and Economic Development Neighborhood Assistance Program Enterprise Zone tax credit of over $436,000 for this investment. The proposed investment will be $1.9 million in the Bethlehem community on the south side. So this tax credit program from the state does actually have a time limit on it, so I'd like to start this project sooner rather than later. So it is actually in the historic district. We've had a long process with the historic commission that's gone back to August. So we went in August, September, and ultimately received an approval and a COA in November. We took October off from the submission process to work with the commission to sort of hammer out differences and settle on an idea that we can take going forward, and we were able to do so. We were granted unanimous approval in that November HCC meeting on the demolition and general conditions for the project. Which is requesting partial demo for the rear portion of 409 Wyandotte Street. After that hearing, we're obviously excited to hammer out the rest of our finances and get the project underway. And then it came time to get demo permits, and we were told by many in the permit office and Historic Society, or Historic Commission rather, that they were unable to based on the COA. I tried to get further clarification from contacts I've made at the Historic Commission and was unsuccessful in those efforts. You know, I've been struggling to get emails and phone calls that have been largely left unanswered, you know, which has led me to come in front of the council tonight. You know, based on the conversation with the Historic Commission we had in November and the way in which the COA is written, we disagree that we did not receive ample approval for the demo. To quote the COA, the approved rehabilitation of the side, north facade, and the rear east facades includes the following details, quote, non-contributing rear additions at 409 Wyandotte Street to be demolished and replaced with a new three-story stair and mechanical tower with a flat roof and sheathed with James Hardy or comparable fiber, cement, and horizontal lap siding. Applicant to submit samples of proposed siding, which we did for consideration during subsequent HCC review. The further development required for the full approval pertains to the details of the finishing and other materials used in the structure, but not the structure itself. To quote the notes from the COA, quote, the applicant agrees to return to the HCC on various items that require further development, including components of the wood look, privacy fencing and balconies, railings and open frame of the rear metal stair, canopy elements, railing for the access ramp, and side facade, signage, lighting, etc. All of those action items are just details and don't actually pertain to the demo itself or the general path of the building. The portion of the building that has been approved to be demolished through the COA is in disrepair with collapsed beams on the inside and partial separation from the rest of the building that we plan on keeping intact. We fear that if it's left much longer, it potentially poses a threat to fellow neighbors and surrounding buildings should it fall off completely. We did obtain a letter prior to our September HCC meeting from a structural engineer that says just that the building is in dire disrepair and needs to be addressed as quickly as possible, and the HCC actually took that into consideration and was a big part of why we were granted unanimous approval that night in November. To conclude, my goal, you know, is not to cut corners. As I said, I'm born and raised in Bethlehem, a great love for the history. But you know, from my standpoint, we actually just received word today that we will get our full bank approval on Friday, this Friday on April 23rd. We simply, we did all our due diligence and we simply can't wait to start this project any longer. You know, as a college student with still 1 year to go, I quite frankly can't afford to be sitting on $1.9 million of bank debt on top of a tax credit from the state of Pennsylvania. While I plan on going back to school to graduate. So with that being said, we have been granted approval for this project by the state of Pennsylvania through our NAP and EDP application. Now we're requesting that the city council moves to approve our demo permit with the understanding that we will go back to the Historic Commission to get the rest of the details ironed out.
Thank you for your comments this evening, Mr. Higme. Ms. Carner, our Director of Community and Economic Development, said that she would be willing to talk with you tomorrow about the details and the timeline of how that could proceed. Council's not in a position this evening to take any action on this, as we don't have enough information we'd need to hear from the HCC. But from my understanding about the project, is that the HCC wanted more information about some of those detail finish items before they were willing to grant the full approval for the demolition. I'm just giving you my perspective. We're over 7 minutes now on your 5 minute time limit. So I'm just giving you the information that I have, as this is the first time this has come across council. So there's really not any information that we would need from you at this point to try to take any action. I think some of these details would have to be worked out with the city's economic development department as well as the HCC. So I think you can expect a phone call from Ms. Carter tomorrow, or you can reach out to her office in the morning.
Great.
Thanks for your comments. Have a good evening.
You too. Thanks. President Waldron.
Good evening, Mr. Gallagher.
Ed Gallagher, 49 West Greenwich. Thanks for the opportunity to speak. Fight the good fight, gang. I signed up to get a call from you guys tonight because I had a specific topic in mind that I wanted to make sure to get out. Relative to George Floyd and the city. I'm going to cut that short, though. You folks have already put in a full day's work here. And I want to say that I appreciate the scrutiny which you've given to the Martin Tower proposal tonight. I can tell you that a great many of the Gadfly followers are following this very closely and are very interested. And you have fought the good fight already tonight. And that will be much appreciated. And Councilwoman Van Wert, the document from Scott Slingerland that you mentioned will be posted on Gadfly first thing tomorrow morning. BethlehemGadfly.com. No reason why people can't text you folks and get copies, but it will be on the Gadfly blog tomorrow morning first thing, and people want to respond with comments, they can there. It is indeed a wonderful document. So I'm not going to talk in detail about what I plan to talk about. I will just say that what I was going to do was make a modest proposal that council set aside some time at the end of next month, the 1 year anniversary of the George Floyd event, to take stock of how the city has responded to that event over the year, to do a kind of report card, and to set some plans, set some goals. The verdict today we can't think of as the end of the ramification of the George Floyd event. So I'm thinking that council, the city, should mark the anniversary of the George Floyd event by going over how the city has responded and looking forward to what we will do in the future. And frankly, if I had taken the time to do what I plan to do, I'd have been Gadfly Gretzky here and indicate that I don't think the city has really done a good job so far. If you're interested, if people are interested, this question of using the anniversary for a kind of retrospect and prospect is the question on the Gadfly forum today for the mayoral candidates. Both mayoral candidates responded to the possibility of marking the anniversary with something. And tomorrow, if they still have some energy, the candidates for city council will respond to that kind of question. I know several of them are watching tonight and they're getting an idea of what it takes to be a council person. So thank you very much for your scrutiny of the Martin Tower. And I'll talk to you again about the George Floyd and the city. Thank you.
Good evening, Mr. Gallagher. City Council is accepting comment on any subject not being voted on this evening, 610-997-7963. We'll also accept comment on any item on our agenda this evening to be voted on. So this is our opportunity this evening to make comment on any subject on tonight's agenda or otherwise. Hello, this is Bethlehem City Council.
Hi, good evening. How are you tonight?
Fine. If you could give your name and address for the record.
I sure can. My name is Matthew, and the last name is Dilbert, D's and David, I-L, B's and Boy, A. And I'm on 261 Johnston Drive, Bethlehem.
Thank you. If you could proceed with your comments to council with a five-minute time limit, thank you.
Oh, sure. I would like to comment that I've been in touch with the chief of police about the speeding on Johnston Drive, and to no avail. And I also watched the police department themselves speed down Johnston Drive. It's not a lot of fun to watch them do it too. And the potholes in the streets and the condition of the road at Bethlehem are absolutely atrocious. That's really all I have to comment about it. I really don't know why we have to drive on cobblestone road in the city of Bethlehem, but that's all I have tonight, and I appreciate your input, guys. Thank you.
Thank you for your comments. Have a good evening.
Yep.
Bethlehem City Council is accepting public comment on any subjects on tonight's agenda, as well as any additional subject, 610-997-7963. This will be our last opportunity this evening for public comment from any member of the public who would like to call in to City Council with any comments on any agenda item as well as any additional comments, 610-997-7963. Moving on with communications, communication 6E.
A memorandum from Police Chief Michelle Kopp requesting Council consider a resolution for the destruction of records from the Police Department listed in the exhibit. The Chief has reviewed the Municipal Records Retention Act, and the records fall within categories where destruction is permitted.
So it will be placed on the May 4th agenda, Communication 6F.
A memorandum from Michael Alcohol, Director of Public Works, recommending a contract with Advanced Environmental Contractors for work related to removing asbestos at the City's Rogers Street facility. Term is 60 days. The cost is $158,000. There are no renewals.
Resolution 10A is on the agenda. Communication 6G.
A letter from the Lehigh Valley Planning Commission concerning the review of an administration proposed zoning ordinance amendment to revise the multifamily development section of the city zoning ordinance to ensure that the provisions that currently apply in the IRR, Industrial Redevelopment Zoning District, related to exemptions from required building size, setback, parking capacity, and number of units in a structure, also apply in the CB Central Business and CL Neighborhood Commercial Districts. The Commission stated that the proposed amendment was generally consistent with the regional plan because it's responsive to regional needs, increases flexibility for multifamily developments, encourages reinvestment in commercial areas, and promotes the fiscal health and sustainability of the city. Additionally, the proposal increases housing attainability and access to employment opportunities.
The proposed zoning text amendment is on tonight's agenda. For first reading is item 9A. Communication 6H.
Street vacation petition from Colt, Vasilidis, Florence, and Rashudi on behalf of petitioners Michael and Gretchen Devers, requesting vacation of unopened portions of Luna and Bushkill Streets. The petitioners purchased the property and plan to demolish the existing structures to build a new house and detached garage. The proposed plans for the property would require vacating the unopened sections of these streets to relieve the owners from certain setback requirements.
We'll accept the motion in a second to schedule a public hearing on the requested street vacation for Tuesday, June 15th.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Dr. Van Wert, second by Mr. Reynolds. If the clerk would please call the roll on the motion.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grohn?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. The public hearing will be scheduled for Tuesday, June 15th. Communication 6I.
A memorandum from City Solicitor William P. Leeson with an attached resolution and associated use permit agreement. The permittee is McCarthy's Irish Pub, Inc. in the event of Tunes at Twilight. The agreement covers select dates from May 6, 2021 through July 22, 2021. that applies to Walnut Street between Main Street and Gutter Street.
Resolution 10B is on the agenda. Pardon me. Reports. I have no reports this evening. Mr. Mayor?
Thank you, Mr. President. Administrative order number 15. I hereby appoint Susan Alcevedo, 2627, Donningham Road, Bethlehem, the Bethlehem Housing Authority. This appointment is to fill the unexpired term of Joseph Long, who resigned effective April 30th, 2021. This appointment is effective through November 2022.
The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Pardon me. Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. Mr. Mayor, thank you for that appointment. I know Mr. Long was there for like how many years? Forever?
19 years. 19.
All right. Well, thank you for appointing Ms. Acevedo to this spot. Thank you. I appreciate that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
And I just want to say a huge thank you to Mr. Long for serving all those years. I know he was very, took it very seriously and was a great contribution to the city. I know he's had some health issues over the last year, and I wish him the best.
Thank you. The clerk will please call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Administrative order number 16. I hereby reappoint Carol Ritter, 419 Dewary Avenue, Bethlehem, as an alternate on the Zoning Hearing Board. This appointment is effective through April 2026.
The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. Administrative Order 17. I hereby reappoint Mike Simonson, Building Inspector, 10 East Church Street, to the Historic Conservation Commission, South Bethlehem and Mount Airy. This appointment is effective through April 2024.
Resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Colon?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0.
Thank you. An update from our health director, Kristen Weinrich. Cases have been slightly lower over the past few days, but still averaging about 30 per day. Yesterday, the health bureau had a clinic at North Hampton Community College and vaccinated 350 students and staff. They are planning a clinic in May with the Bethlehem Area School District to vaccinate students 16 through 18 years of age. Demand for the vaccine is significantly dropping, and the health bureau is working with a physician and a volunteer group on outreach to churches throughout the city. They are also working with church leaders to educate the congregations on the importance of getting vaccinated. And my final comment, yesterday we had a very good announcement about Nike coming to Bethlehem. They will be leasing the 1.2 million square foot building in Majestic Realty. We beat out a site in New Jersey. They probably will start 250 jobs with a possible increase up to 400 to 500. And they're hoping to be in and have a ribbon cutting in mid-July. And they really want to be involved in the community. I've been very pleased with my discussions with them. And I think it's great for Bethlehem and also great for the Lehigh Valley. It will be their East Coast e-commerce fulfillment center. So I'm looking forward to working more closely with them now since the announcement was made. Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Ordinances for final passage, Ordinance 8A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 General Fund Budget, Bill 10, 2021, is sponsored by Mr. Colon and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8B.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 capital budget for water utilities. Bill 11, 2021, is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8C.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 capital budget for sewer utilities. Bill 12, 2021, is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Grown?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Ordinance 8D.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh, Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the 2021 Community Development Block Grant Budget. Bill 13, 2021, is sponsored by Mr. Cologne and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New ordinances. Ordinance 9A.
An ordinance of the City of Bethlehem, Counties of Lehigh and Northampton, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, amending the zoning ordinance section 13-2020-032 to amend provisions for multifamily dwellings in the CB and CL zoning districts. Bill 14-2021 is sponsored by Ms. Gramsci Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Gramsci Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions. Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller, under such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor, are hereby authorized to execute a use permit agreement with McCarthy's Irish Pub, Inc., related to 2021 Tunes at Twilight events. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Gramsci Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Mr. Reynolds?
Oh, wait. Hold on. Sorry, I jumped. It's a wrong resolution.
Okay, let's do that one.
Okay.
So we're
under 10B.
On discussion for resolution 10B, Tunes at Twilight. Mr. Reynolds?
Yeah. Ms. Carter, are you there?
I'm here.
So this is for Tunes at Twilight, which is at McCarthy's Irish Pub, which obviously we know Tunes at Twilight used to be in the Sun Inn courtyard. I guess I would just ask, I know that there has been some discussion there about who uses what and so on and so forth, and I was just hoping for a little explanation here on what their kind of plan is here for Tunes at Twilight this year.
So the information that I had most recently, and I did not participate in the last special events committee where I believe this was probably discussed, was that they were kind of spreading out the Tunes at Twilight concept to have it at different locations throughout the summer, as opposed to concentrating it in one location. Not only is that a benefit under COVID, because you're not having that many people in one place, but it is also then putting people in different parts of the downtown. Specifically with McCarthy's, they're closing the street. And so to have a almost more, you know, kind of permanent Tunes at Twilight on Walnut Street for those activities is, I think, what is in front of you for tonight's meeting.
Thank you.
Thank you. And just following up on that, you said they were going to rotate it around the city for 2021, but I see all of May, June, and July they'll be in this location, and are there plans for other locations as well?
What I understood the last conversation I had with the DBA was that there will be other different locations. This one, I suspect, involves selling alcohol, and so there probably is a different set of requirements associated with this one, but I was under the impression that they were looking at different sites throughout like Main and Broad Street.
But we're not considering that this evening.
Yeah, I'm not sure you need to consider that in the same way because of the street closure and because of the requirements around what is related to this kind of more permanent location. Other places is probably right away permit, frankly, just to have somebody out on the sidewalk and performing.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, Tunes at Twilight was a great event and was missed last year, obviously, because of COVID, and now we see it moved, just maybe 150 feet away into the street to what I perceive as a smaller space. So I'm interested to see how that will work. Where I thought the Sun and Courtyard was a perfect location, I can see why this is beneficial to McCarthy's, but as a overall aspect, it doesn't make a huge amount of sense for me logistically to have it in that location to replace the perfect location that was with a designated stage, and it was a pretty good space for an event like that in the Sun and Courtyard.
Yeah, I think ultimately what's changed is that there's now a business located at the Sun Inn who, just like all of the other restaurants, was scrambling for space during the pandemic. And Sun Inn actually owns about half or maybe slightly more of the courtyard. The city has parcel, the RDA has a parcel, and the city has the street. But at the end of the day, it's private property.
Sure.
And so the easement that the city had for probably about 20 years expired about 20 years ago. And so, certainly we have a very cooperative relationship with the Sun Inn, and I expect that to only become more cooperative as we talk about, how the Sun Inn courtyard can be used in the future. But what I'm under the impression is happening is this is not the only location for Tunes at Twilight at the Walnut Street at McCarthy's, that there will be other locations along Main and Broad at the same time to provide that separation and provide additional business benefit throughout the downtown.
Understood. All right. Thank you, Ms. Carter. Any other comments, Dr. Van Wert?
I just had a quick technical question. It says that the closure is between Main and Gutter, but actually that's not technically correct, right? It's just the same closure that had been happening all during COVID, up to halfway up, right?
I'm deferring to Mr. Apple, who I think is also on the call, but that's my understanding, that yes, there still be access, the two-way access at the eastern end.
That's all. Thank you.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Reynolds?
Just because Ms. Carner had brought up the situation of the Sun and Courtyard and the multiple owners and everything, is that, I know that has been a situation as far as there's some questions about who owns what and who has the right of ways and things like that. And I would just highly encourage the city, and I know Ms. Carner, I've had this conversation with you before, is that, that's an area that the city has talked about putting money into before, has talked about taking it to another level from where it's at currently. And as we come out of the pandemic and as we talk about what we want in our downtown, the Sun, there's only one Sun Inn courtyard there. So I think trying to get everybody on the same page, trying to get whatever permit use agreements we need to be able to put public dollars into that area there, I think is a real priority when you talk to people downtown, especially when we're looking at whatever happens with the future of the Walnut Street Garage, which is going to, whenever that happens, whether or not that's next year or several years down the road, whenever that happens, that's really going to be something that is going to be a point of frustration and a difficult thing for our downtown merchants and people living downtown. But the Sun Inn Courtyard can be one of those things, I think, that if everybody can get on the same page with the city and we're able to drive some infrastructure investment dollars in there, it will help our downtown and it will help what's going to be a difficult situation in the next couple of years at some time. And Ms. Carter, I know we've talked about this. I know this is an issue that you are you are very familiar with, but at the same time, you know, as we're coming out of the pandemic and we're thinking big as far as what we can do as far as the vibrancy of our downtown, that's a huge opportunity for us. Thank you.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Mr. Ramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Walder?
Aye. That's 7-0. We'll be back to Resolution 10A.
Be resolved by the Council of the City of Bethlehem that the Mayor and the Controller under such other city officials deemed appropriate by the City Solicitor are hereby authorized to execute an agreement with Advanced Environmental Contractors for work related to removing asbestos in the City's Rogers Street facility. The resolution is sponsored by Ms. Cramsey Smith and Mr. Waldron.
Discussion? Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. I'll accept the motion in a second to consider Resolution 10C through 10F as a group.
So moved.
Second.
Motion by Mr. Groen, second by Dr. Van Wert. And I'll ask the clerk to call the roll on that motion.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Ms. Negron?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. Resolutions 10C through 10F.
Certificates of appropriateness under the provisions of the Act of the Pennsylvania Legislature and Bethlehem Ordinance are hereby granted for 234 East Wall Street to replace the existing roof and paint the existing brick and trim. 236 East Wall Street to replace the existing roof and paint the existing brick and trim. 246 East Wall Street to replace the existing front portion of the roof to match the rear portion of the roof and the front porch roof, as well as paint the existing brick and trim. 23 East Church Street to enclose a sleeping porch and replace the vinyl siding, remove a third floor window and side opening with cementous siding, replace a second floor window with a similar style window as the first floor window, and relocate a downspout.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Mr. Cologne?
Aye.
Ms. Cramsey Smith?
Aye.
Mr. Groen?
Aye.
Mr. Reynolds?
Aye.
Dr. Van Wert?
Aye.
Mr. Callahan?
Aye.
Mr. Waldron?
Aye. Passes 7-0. New business this evening, Dr. Van Wert, do you have an announcement?
Yep. The Community Development Committee will meet on Tuesday, May 11th at 6 p.m. in Town Hall. There's one agenda item, discussion of an administration bill to expand the eligibility requirements for board members on the Historical and Architectural Review Board.
Any other new business from members of council this evening? Mr. Callahan? Mr. Callahan, I think you can either start over or we can skip you. It's up to you. You're on mute. Still on mute.
Hold on, I'm sorry. I was wondering if the mayor, Mr. Evans, is still there.
Yeah, I'm Dan Bryan, sir.
Eric, so there is a, I became aware of a few days ago about the SAFER grant for FEMA that they set up for the relief of funds for communities for firefighters and police. Are you aware of that?
I'm somewhat aware of the SAFER. I see them. They've been around from time to time. Chief Bakke deals primarily with writing and working with grants directly.
So, I mean, it came to my attention that as of right now, there's $200 million of supplemental funding for, in a SAFER fund. And there's another $100 additional million in supplemental funding for the AFG fund.
which is basically what they do, is that those two funds are earmarked for the SAFER and AFG grants, and the main purpose is to like maintain the ranks and stay within the recommendations and of the NFPA. One of the things that they can do is that money, it's grants, you don't have to be paid back. That money is to help fund firefighters and public safety officials in cities, and there's a timeline on it, and there's a ton of money there to be used right now. And basically the way it works is the first year, this was back in 2019. The first year of the three-year grant, the amount of money that was given and required for the first year was 90% FEMA, 10% for the municipality. The second year was 80-20, the third year was 70-30. In 2020, it basically went even better than that. It was 90-10, 90-10, 90-10. And that's what the thought process is right now, according to what I'm hearing to the lobbyists, that it's going to, in 2021, it's going to be the same format, 90-10, 90% FEMA, 10% for the municipality. So my point in bringing this up is, if that money is there, it's a grant, it's going to be used by those cities if we don't use it, why don't we at least apply for the grant to replace the four firefighters who, or the four fire positions that we cut last year, and when we can reinstall those positions at literally a fraction of the cost of what we were paying for those firefighters before. So we could go back to full staffing of what we had before and only pay 10% of it.
Yeah, I don't have all the documents in front of me right now, Brian. I wasn't expecting a call. You kind of catch me on the spot. And Chief Bakke, I don't see, is also available to comment on it. But there are a number of eligibility requirements that if it was in this particular round of the SAFER grant for firefighters that were laid off, if you remember, we did not lay off. We decided we did not want to furlough, and all the firefighters are still with us, and they'll go through attrition. So as to hire ones that were laid off, we don't have that, or if we're looking to hire or increase the ranks, and we're also not looking to do that. We feel from our last, this is going back to the last budget hearings, that we are right-sized with the force that's put out there now, and the chief spoke to that, and that's kind of going back to November, the specifics of the way the force is laid out through the four platoons. But that's where the administration stands on that now. We are aware of the SAFER, it's been looked at, it's been reviewed by Chief Bakke, and he can comment. If you give him a call, he can talk to you more about that.
Is he on tonight or no?
No.
Alright. I'd like to forward this to you and the chief, and I know that we have some firefighters. Tommy Braver would, I think, wrote some of the grants for the local 735. I was under the impression that we cut those positions last year due to budgetary concerns, not through. I mean, I think everybody would read that. You know, the city would be better served with an additional four firefighters. But I thought we cut those not because of any other reason due to the budgetary concerns that we had last year because of the tough year that we had.
No, if you go back and look at the discussion, the part of a tough year we had is when we reached in and took an additional $1 million in cash on top of it. But part of it is the ongoing battle to control legacy costs. When we talk about budget, and we'll face it again, and then you talked a lot about the ability to control taxes, and 75% is personnel. And when you look, where can we become efficient, where do we feel we can also provide public safety but control costs, especially to the taxpayers, that's where we turned and we took a look at it. We had ongoing conversations with the fire department leadership. They felt they were comfortable in that staffing that we proposed, and that's what we're looking to do going forward. Besides the salaries, we talk, again, we've had long conversations about the pensions and what that ultimately means to the end user, which is the taxpayers of the city. How many can they afford when you bring that back, or you add payroll or personnel anywhere? That's the biggest cost driver we have because it drives not only salary, but health care and pension. And that's not all covered under the grant, the SAFER grant as well.
Is any of it covered under the grant?
Yeah, well, it depends if they're eligible uses, and I don't have it in front of me now, but I remember when we looked at it, the latest version of the SAFER grant, which has been around from time to time for a while, was to bring back people that were laid off, and that was not the case. No one's been laid off. Through the changes we made, we changed the staffing, but as they retired through attrition, we're not going to backfill those positions. But no one was laid off that needs to be brought back because of COVID. That was not, I kind of was talking about two different things in that case.
Well,
I go back to that number.
If I sent the SAFER grant information to you and Chief Vahey, would you guys at least be interested in applying for the grant to see if we're eligible for it and what we could use that money for, and whether it does cost or whether it does cover legacy costs and healthcare costs?
I checked again. It's a fire leadership that does. They have all the specifics and background. They've always been the ones to apply directly. I don't have that kind of information to apply. So I think if you give Chief Vahey a call and ask him about the efforts to do it, it takes a lot of work. So I think you need to make the decision. The chief needs to make the decision based on recommendation of the mayor before all those steps are taken, because the grants take some time to work through it, even if there's assistance from the rank and file throughout 735 or elsewhere. That's going to need to be some time and effort put into that before that strategic decision is made. You just don't submit it just to see what happens. So I would ask you to call, reach out to him directly and have that conversation. He can explain a lot of the details you're looking for.
Yeah, I'll give him a call, and I'll send him an email, and I'll send him the information we have. But I think everybody on council would agree that public safety is a very important thing to the city of Bethlehem and the taxpayers, and I think we'd be better served with if it was only costing us 10% of what the initial cost is, or the whole cost, if we can fund four firefighters for three more years at 10% of the cost, I think that'd be a win-win for the city and for the fire department. So thank you very much.
Yeah, you're welcome. And there are additional commitments too when you bring them on, how long, even after the funding's gone, you need to keep another 3 or 4 years. So the devil's in the details, and we'll get into that, Brian, and be able to respond to you so you we're cleared up on that. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate your help.
Okay. Yep.
Ms. Negron?
Thank you, President Waldron. I just want to thank the administration for the help, and I know this is just the beginning, but April 13 was designated by Congress National Boringenier Day, and we had a groundbreaking ceremony last Tuesday. And I honestly, I just want to say, we didn't even do a press release. My full-time job and so many things that I do, I just didn't have the time. And I was hoping to maybe 20, 30 people, and we almost had 100 people there. And, I hope that you understand, the administration especially understand, how important this event was and how important this monument to the 65th Infantry Regiment is to our community. Just to hear the Borinqueneer, there were two Borinqueneers there in their 80s. And one of them, if you read the paper, he was quoted. He said, "I was really touched when Congress gave me the Congressional Gold Medal for being in here today with my people, celebrating what's going to be. It that really makes me happier. It was very touching to see them there and to hear them talk, say things like that, along with the rest of the community. It was very meaningful to us, to the community, the Latino community." And it was really, it was overwhelming. I thank you. I thank Councilman Reynolds, he was there. I thank the mayor for sending the naming April 13 in Bethlehem, Borinqueneer National Day. It meant a lot, and I just have to say thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Grant. Any other new business, Mr. Reynolds?
I just want to add to what Ms. Negron said. I want to thank her for the organization. And if you were there, I think, and I don't want to speak for Ms. Negron, but she said this to me at the day, is that, you know, one of the things you saw people there that were happy that we were celebrating a part of Bethlehem's history. That when we talk about historic Bethlehem and the history of our community, we're not talking about the history of every part of our community. And I think a lot of people felt very strongly that what we were doing there was celebrating a different part of our history for one of the first times. And as the conversations continue in this country, in this community, about the changing identity of what it means to be an American, what it means to be from our city, I think that Councilman Negron and everybody else that organized that is helping to push us in that direction. And I want to say thank you for that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Reynolds. And I would just add that I finally had an opportunity to get my first dose of the vaccine at the clinic at Wind Creek, and I would have to say I was quite impressed by the setup they had there. I think I was in and out in 30 minutes, including my after-shot wait time, and there was a full flow of people, you know, dozens and hundreds of people moving through that space, and it was effortless as a patient, and they had a great system there, so I want to thank everybody who's volunteering their time and putting in all that effort to try to help vaccinate our community. Any other new business from members of council this evening? Have a good evening. The meeting is adjourned.